When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Get Booked Podcast, a weekly show for personalized reading recommendations. This is episode 232, and we are recording on May 19th. I'm Jen Northington, and I'm here with Amanda Nelson, and we are coming to you from Book Riot. Hello.
Hello.
Happy Tuesday.
It is Tuesday.
Except, I mean, it's happy Thursday to you listeners.
Right.
So there's that.
But it's time.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say, time is sort of not, I'm not great at it right now.
Time has no meaning.
Nope. Mm-hmm. Also, I got a Switch Lite. I caved and I ordered one.
A what?
So the new Nintendo console,
yes.
There's like the full situation, yes. Which is ungettable right now. And then there's like the Game Boy / Nintendo DS version, which you can get. So, but anyway, now I have more video games, and that's, I already couldn't read, and now who knows what's going to happen.
Well, coping is what's going to happen. Which is,
yes, that's, which you is are 100% correct. Yes. We're all coping in various and sundry ways. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's talk about books. But first, if you're new to the show, let me explain how it works. You send in questions, or, you know, any of you, you plural, send in questions, and we will do our best to find your next great read. You can tell us books that you love that you haven't been able to find ones like it. You can ask for recommendations for friends or relatives or family members. You can ask for book club recommendations, whatever you need. We will do our best to find you a good read. You can send those questions either by email, getbooked@bookriot.com, or you can drop them in the form that's at the bottom of the show notes on the site for every episode. And let's see, if you have a time-sensitive question, we will do our best to get to it on air before the date, as long as you put time-sensitive, big letters, all caps, either the first line of the form or the subject line of your email. If we're not going to get to it on air, we might send you an email, so look for those. And then we have a ton of feedback from listeners with further recommendations. Let's see. Summer recommends For the 13-year-old reader looking for a witch story, maybe check out The Casket Girls by Alice Arden. That's Alice with a Y-S. The main character is 16. She returns to New Orleans in immediate post-Katrina to a world of magic that ties to her ancestors, vampires that are on the loose, voodoo ghosts, and of course, teenage romances, both natural and maybe supernatural.
Hey.
One of the side characters grapples with sexuality. Three of the four books in the series are out already, and trigger warning for natural disaster remnants, which includes lots of corpses being found in random places. Lovely. Summer also recommends, for the reader looking for a book for her twin sister, Get a Life, Chloe Brown by Talia Hibbert, which is a fun romance that has an MC with fibromyalgia who has a get a life plan that starts by moving away from her family so she can take care of herself. Feedback for Lily, looking for a badass female witch with a romance arc. Eric recommends Serpent and Dove by Shelby Mahurin. Elizabeth has two suggestions for the listener looking for fiction and nonfiction written in a fragmented style. Goodbye Vitamin by Rachel Kong and In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado. The former gives me strong Jenny Offal vibes, but a little gentler, and the latter is one of the most brilliant books I have ever read, and I don't even normally like memoir. Well, those are strong recommendations. Mm-hmm. And then last but not least, Michelle also wants to recommend In the Dream House by Carmen Maria Machado for Stephanie, who was looking for vignette-style nonfiction. So that's a double vote there. I gotta read that book. It's been on my list.
I have it. I just, you know, story of our lives.
Like, yes.
It's in my house somewhere. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Right. One day, we will read all the books.
I think that's Liberty's job.
Yeah, well, that you're not wrong. That is Liberty's job. All right, so I'm going to read our first question, and then we will take a break for a sponsor, and then we will get to the recommendations. So first question is from Polly, who says, I'm a straight single woman in my 30s who just recently left a good relationship headed towards marriage just because it didn't feel right. I'd love to read fiction or nonfiction about women who did such a thing, left a good, decent man or relationship, and still created happy lives, or women who found love a little later but were still able to have kids slash a partner like they wanted. In this vein, I've loved Spencer by Kate Bullock, The Rules Do Not Apply, and I'm about to read No One Tells You This by Glynis McNichol. All right, so let's have a sponsor message.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Okay, Amanda, women who left relationships and then did other things.
All right, look, like, what you want to read is Eat, Pray, Love, and I'm so sorry about that because this is such a controversial book for a lot of reasons. But Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert is what I'm recommending to you because it's a memoir. And I don't even know if I need to explain what Eat, Pray, Love is about to people. Like, everybody knows what it's about. But when she turned 30, she had a midlife crisis. She was a really successful writer at the time. She was married, had a husband, a house in suburbia, and all of that. Was completely miserable and left her husband. He was a perfectly nice man who wanted children with her and treated her well. And she just wasn't happy and left for that reason and that reason alone. And so, you know, she goes on this whirlwind journey. She goes to Italy to kind of heal her body image issues and learn to love food again. She goes to Indonesia. And then I don't remember Bali. I think, is it Bali? I don't remember the last place she goes. Anyway, it doesn't matter. And learns to like reconnect with her spirituality. And then in the last portion of the book, she does meet a man who she goes on to marry like in real life, not in the book. In real life, she also divorced that man and met a woman who she fell in love with. If you follow her on Instagram, you can, you know, get all of this backstory. But she does go on to have a perfectly fulfilling, lovely, happy life. And a good portion of the book is her dealing with the guilt of having left a perfectly nice man and kind of, you know, shaken up his life and broken his heart in order to save her own, which I think is a lot, is like a really big part of this being in this situation of leaving a good relationship because it doesn't feel right in like a nebulous way that you can't really articulate, but you're still doing it because you know it's the right thing. And a lot of what she says is really useful. It's a very privilege heavy, obviously, like she is a white lady who goes to India to discover spirituality. Like it's very like touchy in that way. But, you know, that's exactly what this book is about. And I think that she handles it as well as that situation can be handled, if you know what I'm saying. So that's Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert.
I just want to say for the record, I took this question to Rebecca because I know that she read and loved No One Tells You This by Glynis McNichol, which she definitely recommends for you and says is great, but is kind of singular. And we were talking and we finally settled on Untamed by Glennon Doyle. And this comes with trigger warnings for alcoholism. This comes with trigger warnings for alcoholism and bulimia, which she does discuss in, you know, some detail in throughout the course of the memoir. But she leaves her husband because in part because has cheated on her, and they're going to therapy about it. And there's lots of various things going on here. He's a great dad and they are trying to repair their relationship. But then she sort of famously meets Abby Wambach at mm-hmm. like an author dinner and falls in love with her. Love and her. So, but really the point of this memoir is her talking about how she has been unpacking the messages that society has given her about what she should want and like what her life is supposed to look like as a woman who has a faith, as a woman who wants to be in a committed relationship and wants to have a family and children. Like, she is talking about how she absorbed very specific messages about how to be a woman in the world and tried to fulfill those messages and was deeply unhappy. And not because, you know, everything was terrible. Like, she was making herself miserable trying to fill roles that just weren't for her. And so this is all about the process of her, like, you know, pinpointing those messages and then letting go of those quote unquote obligations and finding what she actually wants to do, which seemed to me very relevant to your question. Like, when there's not anything major wrong, it can be really hard to figure out, like, well, why aren't I happy? And I think there's a lot of digging that then has to happen. I mean, I know for my own self, there's a lot of digging you have to do into, like, well, what would make me happy? Like, and why am I not doing that already? Why can't I have that? Or why don't I have that? And, like, what are those things? So she's got a lot of, like, very, you know, like, there's a lot of sentences in this book I feel like you could put up on a quote board, kind of, like, make a pretty Pinterest image out of to, like, remind you of, you know, what it is that you're trying to accomplish. And she's a very frank and entertaining writer as well. So I'm about halfway through that and enjoying the ride. And I also just, like, I feel like I'll have to say that Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed is also a book you should have on your bedside table during any major life change, like any ever. So, yeah, Untamed by Glennon Doyle and Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed.
All right. Our next question is from Lisa, who says, this summer we're moving from California to Virginia, and I'm looking for audiobook selections for the drive. In the fall, I begin my MLIS specializing in children and youth service / public librarianship. I also have two daughters who may or may not listen in, a 9-year-old and a 12-year-old. What are some more current middle grade or YA audiobooks that would keep us all entertained and will help me prep for my future in the library? I've already listened to Harry Potter, the Lunar Chronicles, and some Rick Riordan. We've also got a pretty solid book collection of popular titles, things like Mysterious Benedict Society, Book Scavenger, Mr. Limoncello's Library, and Al Capone Does My Shirts. I've never heard of that title. But what a great title, Al Capone Does My Shirts. Last thing, please no narrator with a British accent. I know it's weird, but it puts me to sleep, so not good for driving. Okay, so I picked Orphan Island by Laurel Snyder, which is a middle grade fantasy-ish kind of book. I mean, it's not fantasy-ish, it is fantasy, but it doesn't have, like, magic necessarily or, like, elves or anything like that. So the whole book takes place on one island where everything is perfect. It's, like, perfect weather, really great food, there's shelter, there's everything that kids... There's a library, there's everything that kids could ever need. 9 kids live on the island. They go to sleep in their cabins, you know, every night, wake up every morning, do the same thing every day, except... One day every year, a boat appears from out, you know, out on the ocean, bearing one new child. So the new child comes, and then the boat takes the eldest child on the island away. So every year on the same day, new kid comes, oldest kid goes. The main character is Jenny, and when the book opens, they call it a changing. Her best friend Dean, who is the oldest, leaves on the boat, and incoming is a little girl named S. And so Jenny is the new elder. She's the new oldest child on the island. And so it's her job to kind of mentor S and teach her how to survive on the island, what the rules are and all of that. And then when the boat comes, it's her job to get in it and leave, except she refuses to. She refuses to leave because she's scared and she doesn't know, you know, she's afraid of the unknown. She's lived on this island her whole life. It's everything she's ever known. Everything that she needs is provided for her, and she doesn't know what is out there in the big unknown. So when the boat comes, she pulls it up on the sand and refuses to go, and then everything kind of starts to fall apart a little bit. I mean, this is very obviously a metaphor for growing up, and I think it's a really useful book to have in a children or youth library, because there's so many things that kids encounter that are this, you know, that are like, but I don't understand, but that's scary. I don't understand what's going to happen. I don't know what's going to happen. And I maybe am refusing to do it, or I may be acting out because I don't want to face it. You know, kids whose parents are getting divorced, kids who have lost a grandparent, maybe kids who are dealing with, like, I don't know, a global pandemic, like, all of that can be very frightening. And I think that they will really relate to Jenny's journey of accepting that being more curious than afraid is, like, the only real way to live. And it's just really, like, beautiful and nice writing. And kind of quiet and just great. I really like it. So that's Orphan Island by Laurel Snyder.
I picked Dactyl Hill Squad by Daniel Jose Older, which is a super rompy, fun, slash also addresses some serious issues, alternate history with dinosaurs. There's a lot going on. It's the first in a series also, so if you like it, there's more coming. And it takes place in 1863, so during the Civil War, and it starts in New York, and there are, like, dinosaurs just, you know, in the world, like, roaming the streets like you do. And the armies of the Civil War are actually, like, riding dinosaurs into battle. It's a whole thing. And there are a group of children on a field trip, actually, from the Colored Orphan Asylum when it's like it's all incorporating actual history when the draft riots break out. And their fellow orphans are kidnapped. And so now they have to, like, save their friends. They have to flee where they were in Manhattan for Brooklyn. They go to this Dactyl Hill neighborhood where there's a non-white, you know, people of color community sort of setting up independently, banding together to keep each other safe. And, you know, they, like, learn how to fly on dinosaurs and they have to go rescue their friends. And it's just a whole situation thing. So I feel like it would be very entertaining for a car ride. And I think it works for all age groups. And Daniel Jose Older, I think, does a really good job in all of his books of, like, giving these, you know, weighty issues, like, yeah, Civil War and, you know, racism in the North during this time period and the draft riots and all of these things, but making it accessible and action-y and fun at the same time. So, again, that's Dactyl Hill Squad by Daniel Jose Older. All right, our next question is from Isabel, who, by the way, lives in Westry, which is where The Outrun by Amy Liptrot takes place in the Orkneys, which I talked about on the hand cell. And Isabel, thank you for writing in and telling us that. I am delighted to hear more about that environment because it was so much fun reading that book. Okay, so Isabel says, I'm looking for some fiction where the forest, in a non-creepy way, is key to the book. While being in lockdown on a small, idyllic Scottish island is certainly nothing to complain about, I miss trees. We have had no trees here since the Vikings chopped them all down way back when. And now it's too windy, so any miracle trees we can get to grow just grow stunted, spindly, and sideways. So I'm looking to get my beautiful forest fixed through my books until I can travel to the mainland again and hug some trees. Can I just, like, let's take a moment to enjoy, like, the Vikings chopped down all our trees as a problem set.
Europe is so fascinating. Like, I forget how young America is and how our problems are so, like, recent, you know? And they're definitely not the Vikings chopped down all the trees.
It's so, I mean, that's, like, that sucks. But also, it's, like, yeah, talk about weird problem history. Weird history problems. Good times. Amanda, what did you pick?
I picked The Overstory by Richard Powers, which comes with trigger warnings for suicide and self-harm, and won the Pulitzer, I'm pretty sure. Won the Pulitzer in 2019. So this is a really long book about trees, and I think will definitely scratch the itch that that you have for wanting to read about forests. It's separated into four parts, root, trunk, crown, and seeds. And so in the first part, it's a collection of they're almost short stories, really, little vignettes about nine different families or characters and how their lives are shaped by specific trees in their, like, vicinity. Some of these vignettes follow one person. Some of them follow several generations of a family over time. And then as the book carries on, like, the trunk portion of the book brings all of these people together around certain stories about trees, and then crown brings them apart, and then seeds goes looking into the future. The book spans time, like, hundreds of years in every portion, and is very overtly activist. Like, this is a book by a man who wants you to care more about trees than you do, and, like, that is the point. And it's all wrapped up in these stories about people who come and go and have drama and, you know, like, death and birth and marriage and affairs and all of this kind of stuff while surrounded by these, like, ever-present, really long-living, beings that can communicate with each other and are sentient in ways that we don't necessarily consider in our day-to-day life. And he's making really broad statements here. Like, this is not a book without a message. You know, he's making really broad statements about how humans treat the natural resources, specifically trees, in our world, and how our mindset of, like, constant growth and constant improvement and progress and owning and all of that is kind of counter to the nature that we are surrounded by, but like to pretend is only there for our own purposes. So I think this is exactly what you're looking for. That's The Overstory by Richard Powers.
Yeah, we have been doing a read-along here of that, and we just finally finished. It's a long book, and we've been reading it out loud over the course of, like, I don't know, it might be 6 months at this point.
Wow.
And it is, I like, its strongest point is whenever it's talking about trees, those are the best parts of that book, in my opinion.
I totally forgot to mention that, like, there are portions of this book where Richard Powers gets in lanes that are not his lane. Like, he is writing about East Asian immigrant families. He's writing about disabled characters, like, not his lane. And it is a little cringy in some portions, but I still think because of the tree content, hashtag tree content,
right.
it's still what you're looking for. Just, you know, kind of going with eyes open.
Yeah. I think I would agree with that. Okay, so I try not to do these so close together, but it's not my fault that Prodigal Summer by Barbara Kingsolver is the perfect recommendation for you. So I know I talked about it pretty recently, but here we are again. It really is such a great book about trees, among other things. It does come with trigger warnings for loss of a spouse and bigotry, and it is one of my favorite books about the natural world, and it takes place in part following a reclusive, like, wildlife biologist, who lives in a cabin on a mountain in I'm pretty sure it's the Appalachia area, Southern Appalachia, near a farming town, and she is, like, you know, excited that coyotes are finally returning to the region. And then she encounters this hunter who is in her forest and therefore in her space. She feels very proprietary. And while she is both very wary of him and, like, doesn't want him touching her coyotes or, like, messing with any of the other predators in the region, they also end up having an affair. Whoops.
Hey-o.
And it's very interesting how that gets handled. And then down in the farm town, there is a young city woman who has just married a farmer and is really struggling to fit in with his family and with the town. They're all sort of keeping her on the outside. And there's a lot of, like, sort of classic miscommunications, people thinking one thing and actually meaning another. And it's a whole situation. And then there are these old feuding neighbors, one of whom is this older woman who is running an organic orchard and, like, won't use pesticides and is, like, very eccentric. And then her, like, cranky old bigoted white man neighbor who just is like, your weeds are getting on my plot. Like, like move your stupid sign. I hate you. And how they work that out. And it's just great. It's just great. And there's so many amazing descriptions of the natural world in here. And the way people interact with it is examined, but also these story, like the characters, you fall so hard for them in very different ways, and it's really lovely. So again, that's Prodigal Summer by Barbara Kingsolver.
All right, our next question is from Michelle, who says, I'm in need of escapist reading, and that means queer, fantasy, romance. We're talking magic and mages, sexy humans falling for even sexier elves, turmoil, angst, and through it all, a happy ending. Books in a similar vein that I've loved are The Charm of Magpie series by K.J. Charles, Salt Magic, Skin Magic by Lee Welch, and the Kingston Cycle series by C.L. Polk. These are all Victorian-era-ish historicals, which are my fave, but I would love to find something more high fantasy to ramp up that escapist itch. Bonus points for an audiobook. Okay, I picked Of Fire and Stars by Audrey Colthurst for you, which is the first book in the Fire and Stars fantasy, epic fantasy YA series. This is real high fantasy, like kingdoms and princes and princesses and magic and all of that. So the main character, I love this book so much. Look, the main character's name is Dina, and she is a very proper princess lady person. So she comes from a very traditional kind of kingdom. She has, her whole life has been spent knowing that she's betrothed to a prince from a neighboring kingdom. She knows that her marriage is going to be political, but she has hopes that, like, they'll like each other, maybe even love each other. And so she spent her, like, 16 or 17 years, I don't remember how old she is, training for that, like, learning politics, learning the culture of the kingdom that she is destined to be married into. learning how to be a good hostess. Like, she wants to be a good queen. She doesn't just want to get married and, you know, be pampered and taken care of. She wants to participate in the life of this kingdom, and she really believes in this. Like, she believes in royalty. She believes in the responsibilities that come along with it. So that's her thing. And so when the book opens, she is arriving in this new kingdom to meet her betrothed. But what happens is she ends up falling like hella in love with her prince's sister. So that's a wrench. And the prince's sister is amazing. Her name is Mare. I mean, her name is like Amaranthine or something like that. But her name is Mare. She goes by Mare. And she refuses. She's the opposite of Dina. Like, refuses to participate in royalty. Feels only suffocated by the responsibilities that come with it. She does not think it's possible to effect good change in a kingdom from, like, on high on a throne. So she has pretty much ignored her royal responsibilities. She spends all of her time training the war horses in the stables, and leaving, like, sneaking out of the palace to go be a spy for her uncle and, like, live the life that she wants to live. And then a really high member of the royal family is assassinated. The two of them come together to try to help solve, like, who killed this person who they both really loved. And their feelings become feelings with a capital F. And then, like, what do you do with that? Because I'm super engaged to your brother and this is really awkward. And so you got to follow them through all of their angst and all of their feelings and all of the political intrigue. And there's, oh, bonus twist, Dina has magical powers that she has to hide because this kingdom that she's marrying into thinks that people with magical powers are heretics. So she's, like, double hiding who she is from everyone around her. It's just so great. Really fast read. Super, super fun. So that's Of Fire and Stars by Audrey Coulthurst.
I am recommending the Tensorate series by J.Y. Yang. And the first book, although I actually discovered after the fact that I read these in the wrong order. And I do recommend all of them. And they actually fit together a little bit like puzzle pieces, so it's kind of fine. But anyway, technically, the first one is The Black Tides of Heaven. And these are high fantasy in the silk punk vein. So they are, instead of being influenced by, you know, European history, they are influenced by Asian history. I believe these are East Asian history specifically. And it's great. It is so, like, there's definitely romance. There aren't any elves, but there's a lot of romance. There's a lot of magic. There are some amazing characters. Almost everybody is queer. Like, they're just a celebration of all of those things that you love. And this first one introduces you to the twins, Mokoya and Akiha. And they are the children of a ruler who's known as the Protector, who sells them, actually, to a monastery as little kids to be raised by the head monk there for, like, political reasons, basically. And Mokoya has a gift of prophecy. And Akiha is not as, you know, quote unquote, gifted in that way, but he's really good at figuring out, like, why people do things and, like, understanding the different actions of adults and the politics around him. So, and he has really seen, he's, like, seeing firsthand how unjust his mother's rule is. And there's this rebellion, and so he gets involved, and then everything gets nuts, and, you know, he has to figure out, like, how to navigate his sister, his relationship with his sister, who is not involved with the rebellion, but, like, should she be? Unclear what's going on there. And also his own feelings of being sidelined by, you know, her sort of shiny gifts and, you know, being overlooked by other people in his life. And it's just the start of this, like, epic, amazing fantasy adventure. Like, again, I highly recommend all of the books in this novella series. And they are available in audio. So, again, that is the Tensorate series by J.Y. Yang. And the first book is The Black Tides of Heaven. And it is time for another sponsor break. All right. Our next question is from Brooke. Who says, I almost said book. Our next question is not from book. It's from Brooke. Who says, I'm looking for a dystopian / sci-fi book. It isn't something I read often, but I like to kind of pepper my usual historical fiction / graphic memoir / YA reading with it every once in a while when I need to shake things up a bit. Station 11, Age of Miracles, and Severance have done this for me recently. I love how everything in my daily life starts to seem weird when I'm reading a book that makes me think about how everything could be changed. Can you help me find something, please? Amanda.
I feel like I should note that this is kind of an old question.
Yeah.
this question came in before March. So, I mean, your life probably seems weird right now without the books we're about to recommend to you, but we're going for it anyway. So I picked The Book of the Unnamed Midwife by Meg Ellison, which won the Philip K. Dick Award in 2014, I think. And this is exactly, I mean, it's dystopian science fiction. It is about a pandemic. So if that's a little too on the nose for you right now, then you can, you know, go ahead and skip it. But in this pandemic situation, the main character, I don't think she's ever given a name. Well, that's duh. The Book of the Unnamed Midwife. She's not given a name. She's a nurse. She's a midwife and a nurse. And she exists in this world where the plague that comes attacks mostly women and children. Some men do die, but it's especially bad for women and children, and especially bad for women in childbirth. So what's happening is that women are dying at really large rates, children are dying at really large rates, and women are not able to bear any more children. So humanity is functionally on its way to extinction. And being a woman, she survives the pandemic, the main character, and has to figure out how to function in this new world as one of the few remaining women, which I'm sure you can imagine causes a lot of problems for the few remaining women in a world full of men with no social structure or laws or consequences anymore. So she cuts all her hair off, you know, wraps her chest, pretends to be a man as much as humanly possible for her own survival. She raids pharmacies and collects a bunch of birth control and IUDs and like birth control shots, and then kind of makes it her mission to find other women who have survived and make sure that they can survive the rest of the pandemic, because if they get pregnant, they're going to die. So she's distributing this birth control. It's so fascinating. It's the only post-apocalyptic book that I've read that addresses this specific kind of situation where, like, what are we going to do about birth control, though? Like, what happens to the population, you know? And so we kind of follow her on her various and sundry travels and her encounters with people. She has a lot of near misses from death and, like, terrible situations. And she is the unnamed midwife of the title in as much as, like, that's her actual job, to provide, like, OBGYN services to women. But she is also, because of her ability to survive all these situations, and she does ultimately survive, like, you know, the book, kind of helping birth humanity almost into its second chapter. And there is a sequel to the book that follows her even farther. So that's The Book of the Unnamed Midwife by Meg Ellison.
Accidental theme alert. My book also deals with birth control in a dystopian future, but from a very different angle. Mm-hmm. I'm recommending Bannerless by Carrie Vaughn, which is the first in the Bannerless saga. I actually haven't read the rest of these yet. The first book ends on a reasonably satisfying note, but I really want to. I really enjoyed this because it is sort of like, I mean, as much as any dystopia can be gentle, it's not super violent. It's actually pretty low key in a lot of ways. And it feels very like exploratory in I think similar ways to Severance and Station 11, although these books all have their very own unique feel to them. I wouldn't necessarily comp them in terms of tone, but in that, like, they're just like, what would it look like? And it doesn't have to be, you know, all action sequences. Like, it's much quieter than that. And so this takes place on, I believe it's the West Coast. It's not, like, kind of really super specified, but there's economic environmental collapse going on. The infrastructure is really patchy and weird. Some places are doing fine, like even thriving. Some places are really not doing great. And everybody who's banded together and are thriving are practicing pretty strict population control because, you know, look what happened last time. And so, you know, you have to, like, basically apply for a banner, which is permission to have a child into your household. And the households are, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 or 5 people. It's multiple people per one single permission to have a child. And they have these investigators, sort of like police-y kind of things, but they mediate. They're mediators. They mediate disputes in the communities. There's not formal policing, except for, like, if things get so bad that you can't resolve it yourself, you can call in one of these investigators. And Enid is brand new to her job. She's very young. People are maybe not taking her super seriously, but there is a death that somebody has called in an investigation on. And, like, is it murder? Is it an accident? Who knows? And as she works this case, you also get to follow her around in this world. You get to see how she got to where she is and what her past has been like. And it is just really fascinating and interesting and in a different kind of take than I've seen in other ways. So again, that's Bannerless by Carrie Vaughn.
All right. Our next question is from Christian, who says, I need a good realistic fiction book to get me hooked back on reading. So I picked Braised Pork by Anyu, which is kind of a new release. It came out earlier this year, and it's super weird, and I like it so much. It's very strange and quirky, and it's one of those novels where, like, nothing much happens. It's kind of a character study, and you're following this one person on one kind of, like, emotional or mental or spiritual journey or what have you. So Jia Jia is the main character. She lives in Beijing in a really nice apartment with her husband, who's very wealthy, but, like, kind of older than her and very distant. They've not had any children. They've not had even really, like, a very close relationship or close marriage. And so they have breakfast, and she starts packing for a trip. He wants to take her, I think it was to Tibet, for a vacation. So she starts packing. He's in the bathtub, and she goes in the bathroom and asks him a question, and he's dead. Just, like, dead. And his family will not let her do an autopsy, so she can't figure out what exactly happened. Like, did he have a heart attack? Did he drown himself? Like, what happened? So she doesn't even get that kind of closure about his death. And he leaves no note or anything like that. He just leaves one sketch, one drawing that he did on the bathroom sink that's of, like, a half man, half fish. It's like a weird kind of little creature that he's drawn. And she understandably falls into, like, a lot of grief and a lot of fear about what she's going to do. He wasn't very nice to her, and he didn't leave her, despite his great wealth, didn't leave her any money except for the apartment. And so she has to figure out what to do. So she goes back to work as an artist. She was a talented painter before she met her husband. I mean, obviously still is, but was working as a talented painter before she met her husband. So she goes back to work as an artist, but is kind of haunted by that, like, weird little fish drawing that her husband left. Like, what does that mean? Is she supposed to understand that? Like, did he actually commit suicide? And now she's supposed to know why, because he drew a fish man? Like, it doesn't make any sense. So she starts kind of retracing his steps in his life. She goes back to Tibet, to where her husband had been before, to try to figure out, like, was there something here that has to do with it? Like, it's a weird little mystery that ends up being very based in, like, a spiritual experience that the character is having. And so you ask for realistic fiction. This is realistic fiction. It does have possibly a kind of fabulous magical realism sort of thing going on. Or the main character might be hallucinating. Like, it's kind of up to you to make the call. And that's one of those things about contemporary literary fiction that I really like, that kind of weird, ambiguous, like, what's happening here? It doesn't really tell me, but it does tell me a lot about my own preconceived notions and my own biases and things like that. So that's Braised Pork by Anyu.
So I am using up our third recommendation for Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. And I'm doing it because, I mean, this always feels so dangerous. I'm like, is this the question I want to use that third, you know, mention for? But the reason I picked it is because I have not read as much realistic contemporary fiction in the past few years because of various, like, work and also preference things. But this book, when I read it this past year, was the book that reminded me how much I love realistic contemporary fiction. I just had forgotten. I forgot how great the reading experience can be. And so I, like, want other people to have that same experience. So this might be that book for you, and that is why I'm using up our third mention. This book goes a lot of dark places, although I think ultimately is very hopeful and optimistic. But along the way, some trigger warnings for domestic violence, rape, racism, homophobia, self-harm, depression, and child abuse. Like, the whole gamut of ways that people are terrible to each other exist in this book and are addressed directly and sometimes in detail. Like, it's rough. But it is a narrative that follows the different lives of these people, many of whom are girls or women, some of whom are not. And they all connect to each other in these really fascinating ways. It's not super straightforward. The first couple narratives are, you know, an artist who has been sort of on the outs, a Black artist in England who is a playwright. And one of her plays is finally getting, you know, produced at the National Theater. It's such a big deal. It's her breakthrough into mainstream society. Is she selling out? Is this just like her finally deserved moment? And then you get her daughter's perspective on her mom, and then you get a friend, and then it really starts to spiral out, and you're like not always clear initially, like, oh, who's this? Who is this? And how are they connected? But they always connect back. And I just think that Evaristo has sort of captured an amazing cross-section of humanity in this book that it was like glorious to be part of and to read. And yeah, I really loved it. It's just amazing. And the style, when I first looked at the page, I was like, oh no, it's experimental prose. But actually, I think it flows really, really well. It's very accessible to me, and I think it will be to others. So yeah, cannot recommend it highly enough. It was the joint winner of the Man Booker Prize, mm-hmm. super deserved for 2019. Again, Girl, Woman, Other by Bernardine Evaristo. All right. Our last question is from Kristen, who says, two of my favorite books, Saga by Brian K. Vaughan and Fiona Staples, and The Blind Assassin by Margaret Atwood, have pulpy books as a main component of the story, yet I have somehow never read any myself. I would love a few suggestions for books or authors to check out. Almost anything goes, except I cannot stand when ancient or immortal beings start romantic relationships with teenagers / early 20-year-olds. Ew, just ew. Oh, sorry. That just cracks me up. Okay, Amanda, what did you pick?
Okay, so I love this question, and I did have to sit down and think a little bit about what Kristen meant by pulpy books. So if you haven't read Saga or The Blind Assassin, both of these books have books in them that the characters are reading. And in Saga, it's like a way over-the-top interspecies romance. And in The Blind Assassin, it's like a very old-school kind of sci-fi. I think it also has some romance in it. Also a little bit over-the-top. So the theme here is like, it's over-the-top. And I feel like that really hits the nail on the head of what pulpy books are. So I picked I Am Justice by Diana Munoz-Stewart, which is the first book in the Black Ops Confidential series. And this is like the most over-the-top thing I have ever read. And it's so much fun and like a really steamy romance. So it's about a woman named Justice Parrish. That's right. Justice. trigger warning for sexual abuse of children. So her name is Justice, and she is was rescued like from the streets by the Parrish family, this really wealthy family of like seeming do-gooders and philanthropists who in reality rescue kids from the street and like train them to be vigilante assassins. Ah! So she is trained to be a vigilante assassin. They use their power and their skills to take down really high-powered people who are, like, you know, harming kids or causing injustices to happen throughout the world and are escaping the law. And so she has a new target. It's a child or a human trafficking ring in the Middle East. And so she needs to go over there and take down the guy who is in charge of it to dismantle, you know, this terrible thing that's happening. The hero's name is Sandesh, and he is former special forces and now has started a humanitarian group to aid countries that have been torn apart by civil war. And he, you know, needs money because if you've ever run any kind of nonprofit, you need money. And he gets like hooked up with Parrish Industries, Justice's family, and all of their money. The catch is that he has to deal with their PR person, who is Jazz Hands Justice Parrish, not Justice the concept. Justice is their PR person, and that's her cover. And so they both end up in the Middle East doing their like cover. Like, she is there as a quote unquote PR person, in reality to like assassinate this dude. He is there for real to further the cause of his humanitarian group. She gets injured in the course of going after this guy that she's been put you're given the mission of assassinating, and he discovers who she really is and like what her actual deal is, and then the two of them have to like go on the run. There's a lot. It's like, it's not insta love, but it's insta lust, like very pulpy insta lust. Like, oh, we just met, I shook your hand, so let's go to the elevator. Yeah. So the boning is gonna, we've commenced to bone like right now, right? We're gonna commence to bone in the elevator, and it's just, it's so great. Like, I laughed. I don't know if I'm supposed to laugh at some of the stuff in the book, but I did. But it doesn't take away from the reading experience. Like, you're still here for these two, and they're just Robin Hood, ridiculous do-gooderness, and weird assassination missions from their mothers. It's just great. So that's I Am Justice by Diana Munoz Stewart.
Nice. Yeah, so I picked, for the sci-fi angle, Chilling Effect by Valerie Valdez, which, amazingly, we actually have not talked about yet this year, which boggles my mind. Like, how? But here we are. I'm going to talk about it. And I picked it because what I love about this book is that, to me, it marries a little bit of noir, a lot of sci-fi, and like a great sense of humor. And it does feel like the kind of story, I mean, much funnier than the book Inside of the Book in the Blind Assassin, for the record. But like, I think it's like new era pulp in the best possible way. I love it so much. It is about the captain of a crew who do, like, you know, there's like a shipping crew. They deliver small cargo. They exist on very little money. The captain is Eva Innocente, and she is like foul-mouthed and like very no-nonsense, and just, you know, wants to protect her crew, make a living, not have to deal with other people and their garbage. Which, of course, is exactly what she has to deal with for the whole book. Her sister is kidnapped by, like, the space mafia called the Fridge. And they won't take money for payment, which is good because Eva doesn't have any. What they want is for her to run missions for them that are increasingly dangerous. And she doesn't want her crew to be involved. So she's like got to make up all of these excuses for why they have to go on these weird missions and like not let them in on it. And they're all very close. There is a romance subplot that's amazing. And there's like psychic cats and like a weird like alien emperor who's following her around demanding that she become part of his harem and like blowing things up when she says no. And it's just like the biggest, most fun, again, over the top, like Amanda said, sort of storyline. It's so entertaining. It's so well done. It just sucks you right in. And I think it does qualify. So again, that's Chilling Effect by Valerie Valdez. Side note, the sequel is coming out in the fall of this year. So that's something we can all be excited about. And that's our show.
Woohoo!
Thank you all so much for listening. As always, we hope you are all doing as well as is possible in these wild and crazy times. If you are so inclined to leave a rating and or a review on Apple Podcasts, we super appreciate it. It helps juice the algorithm so other people can find us, and we do like to see the feedback. Thank you to our sponsors for making the show possible. And in between episodes, you can find us on social media. Amanda, where are you?
I'm on Instagram at I'm Amanda Nelson.
I am also mostly on Instagram at I Am Jen IRL. That's IAMJENNIRL. And that's our show. We'll talk to you next time.